Then this is
right, because I've never heard this
yes.
before.
So we are ready to start. This is the November 9th, 2022 Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting of the Board of Directors for the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agencies. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom as convenience to the public. Members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. To participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You'll be notified when it is your turn to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial star 9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial star 6 to unmute. For the public that are attending in person, there are public cards on the table outside. Please complete them and return them to UNI to help expedite public comments. Procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each item. Staff will make a presentation. I will ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee then comes to a consensus as to whether to move the item to the board for consideration. And we will consider whether or not to put something on consent at that time. Any PowerPoints shown on tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. All members of the committee are present. And with that, we'll go ahead and go to item one, which is the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Butte, would you like to lead us in the pledge, please?
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. With that, we're going to item number two, which is public comment on items which are not on tonight's agenda. I have no card for item number two. Is there anybody online that might like to comment? Great, thank you. So item number three is presented by Assistant General Manager Cole, and this is the introduction of the new Water Resources Director.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair Ford. To say that I'm thrilled or ecstatic would be probably an understatement. We are fortunate tonight to have Ali El Hassan here. He is our new Water Resources Director. Just really excited to have Ali on board. I think you guys all know how challenging the recruitment was for this position. We really wanted to find the right person. We think we have done that with Ali. He's got 3 days now and part of a night here. So just really excited. I think Ali's going to be a tremendous addition to our team and look forward to some really good things. And I figured maybe just do a little bit of introduction. Let Ali say a few words about himself and his background, and then obviously there will be a lot of time to get to know Ali as we go forward. So Ali, go ahead.
Thank you, Steve. Mr. Chair, board members, thank you very much for this opportunity to be here tonight. My name is Ali Al Hassan. I'm the new director of Water Resources. I really value this opportunity to work in this organization. I'm looking forward to work with all of you and know more about you and you know more about me. I came from Minnesota. I have been working for Minnesota, the Metropolitan Council, Environmental Services for the last 10 years. Before that, I used to be a consultant here in California, up in Sacramento. I have been working with the state agencies as well as also working with private entities doing water supply assessment for many around the state. And before that, I used to work in a regulatory agency in New Mexico as an engineer in the Office of the State Engineer. My background, my educational background, I have a PhD in engineering, and I've done that in Japan, so I speak Japanese, and so it's I have been all over the world for doing my education. I'm looking forward to work with the staff as well as the board members in moving the vision of the organization of being exemplary water management for high quality for the residents of the valley and improving the quality of life of the residents of the valley. And with that, if you have any questions, if you want to know more about me, let me know, and I will be willing to share more than that.
We have no online comments. Thank you. Director Kutzer.
I must say, moving from the Chicago area, congratulations on escaping the winter.
Thank you.
Yeah, it gets hot in the summer, but it's nothing like 20 below zero and having to plug in your car battery.
Exactly. Just welcome. I think we're really excited to meet you. We've been eagerly awaiting to find out who's going to be filling this position. And I think, you know, you have very big shoes to fill, but it sounds like you are a wonderful person to fill that role. So just welcome to the agency. Yeah.
And we got to talk today at the ribbon cutting. So it's good to have you aboard. I'm sure Steve is quite pleased to get somebody here.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make sure that you give me the credit for the rain for the last 2 days. I started on Monday, so I have.
That is a great skill.
I know. So I was working with me some rain, and you asked me to for that.
And so expectations, we need it every week.
If you fail now, you just accept your responsibility, right? Well,
I tried my best the first 2 days.
You're off to a good start. Welcome aboard, Dr. Al-San.
Thank you, Brad.
I think we've all been looking forward to your arrival. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
So that concludes item number three. With that, we move on to item number four. This is presented by Mac Dickens. It's to recommend authorizing the general manager to execute a construction contract for the Bridgeport Aqua Park. Mr. Dickens, if you're ready.
Yes, thank you, Chair Ford. Let me get this set up here. Make sure you can see what I'm seeing. All right, well, Chair Ford and members of the committee, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. Also, welcome, Ali. I've been in my office today, but been pretty busy. I look forward to meeting you in person, and nice to see a fellow New Mexican at some point here in California as well. Real quick here, we got a this is a follow-up presentation to what I presented in September at the Water Resources and Watershed Committee. And this presentation is a brief update and review of issues and questions that arrived during that initial presentation. So it'll be slightly shorter, but provide a little more context for those questions of which the committee were interested in. So tonight's objectives, again, are to seek the Water Resources and Watershed Committee approval to recommend to the SCV Water Board of Directors to authorize the general manager to execute a construction contract for Bridgeport Pocket Park. I will review the size, scope, and the design process, provide an overview of the lowest cost proposal with some element analysis, review the updated project strategic objectives and value added, and we'll conclude with question and answer. And as you can see, I took a picture of myself at the park here. It's on the right. You can see me way, way, way over there. I'm about halfway in the middle of the park there, and there's an electric vehicle park where we envision the pad. So just a little context there. In addition to that, again, this Bridgeport Pocket Park is located near the parking lot and school drop-off of Bridgeport Elementary in the entrance section of Bridgeport Park. It's approximately 16,000 square feet. Based on information provided by city parks personnel, this park hosts about 16,000 visitors annually. That includes six special events with 300 to 500 attendees per event. It's used for sport and activity use, general recreation, and school functions. And of course, this park was selected from a criterion analysis matrix that the agency and the city of Santa Clarita conducted together, evaluating several sites to search for the optimal location for the demonstration garden. I would also note here too, per the recommendation from the committee, I was able to find a car that was to scale. And so there's a little red sedan there parked in what would be the parking lot to give you some idea of the scale and size of the pocket park. So in terms of the design scope, again, the committee provided feedback in terms of what was incorporated in the design scope and how we worked with our design team. Again, the design team included members of the agency, several local residential designers from across the valley who we work with in the lawn replacement program, and members from the City of Santa Clarita Parks Division to provide us with insight into smart practices for park and public works projects. So with that, you can see the plant palette incorporates drought-tolerant SCV waters, hottest plants, flowering plants, pollinators, ground cover, no sharp plants, kid-friendly trees, non-invasive and native. And you can see all the criteria, the irrigation equipment. We initially wanted drip irrigation, but the designers and the city requested that it incorporate high-efficiency spray, which will work. We've learned that there are certain types of plants that work better with high-efficiency spray as opposed to drip. We did want to incorporate signage. We know that signage is an important piece of the branding, but also the education engagement elements. We want to make sure that when people are at the park, that they're well aware of what its purpose is, who's sponsoring it, and what they're hoping to gain from their visit. It needs to be accessible for ADA and California code requirements. We have additional displays, permeable concrete pad to display EV, tiny homes, and other items. We did have to add some recreation, benches, trash cans. We had considered a bottle refill station, but it was determined not to be ideal at this site. And then, of course, we have additional things in the future to look at, which is education interactive materials. But currently, the site would have the signs for all the plants, kiosks, and signage to maintain collateral materials to promote the agency's programs and the smart practices incorporated in the park. And then in addition to the maintenance, we wanted it to be maintenance-friendly, minimal rockscape, utilize some existing trees and perhaps motion sensors or other tracking technology. The plants needed to be robust, hardy, and permanent based off of insight from city staff. So as you can see, it's it's going to be a little bit more than you might get from a typical front yard. It is a demonstration garden, but it also is a public works project that needs to be to the standards of the park. So again, looking at the cost proposal, the lowest cost came in at $373,000. That was from four different bids that we received in August. I broke down the costs in the proposal by the various elements, including construction, signage costs, irrigation, non-plant landscape, which would include the rain garden, mulching, other components, boulders that would not be considered landscape, but are not plants, but part of the landscape, pathways and pads, plants, and then services. And typically speaking, when a residential customer or a business participates in this project, they're going to have things that are going to be more specific to the non-plant landscape, pathways and pads, and plants. So those costs, as you can see, as a relationship to the overall project, are roughly about 32% of the total cost there, which is kind of in line with what we had initially envisioned and what we estimated. But the additional costs because of the public works project, prevailing wage inflation, we can see that there were increases in those costs. But I think this gives a good idea of the cost, total cost of the project, but also the square footage of the cost per square foot. So turning to strategic objectives, again, The demonstration garden promotes drought-tolerant and water-efficient landscapes out in the community, which is one of our strategic objectives in the strategic plan. It communicates customers the conservation as a way of life, which is also a strategic plan objective. It does create a collaboration opportunity with the city of Santa Clarita, both in the design process, but then also in continued education for years to come. So a lot of partnership there, as that will be part of the park site, but also we can promote water conservation, training, drought tolerant landscaping. And so too can the city of Santa Clarita by demonstrating designs that would be acceptable and attractive in our community. It integrates demonstration functions with existing parks. It improves community access to the demonstration garden. It enhances education programming. And of course, it converts this turf area, this previously turf area, to sustainable garden. Lastly, I would just point out the value added, which is in addition to the strategic objectives that I just mentioned. And really, it comes down to these three categories: education, location, and collaboration. Regarding education, the agency conducted a survey of its lawn replacement program last year before updating the program that had more than 1,500 respondents, noting one of the key notes that we discovered from that survey was that customers were looking for demonstration and examples of what they could convert their landscapes to. So there's a huge need in the community for landscapes that are appropriate and climate appropriate for their homes. It does have the opportunity to leverage also with the city, but also with the elementary school programming. And of course, we can use this in combination with our strategy to have, education, mostly child education, adult education classes up at the Rio Vista Garden. But then this leverages and provides more residential education throughout the year. The next piece I want to point out is location, and that is that parks obviously offer prime real estate. They do have an embedded audience of 16,000 visitors annually, and that park would be open 365 days a year. And so I think it's very difficult when you think about the value of that land that the city has offered for the demonstration component. One, it's a prime real estate, but it also is has that embedded audience. And that's where I want to turn to the last piece, which is that collaboration. Again, we do have an MOU with the city of Santa Clarita, but this creates an opportunity for us to both educate on the benefits of sustainable landscapes and gardens in the valley and promote that to residents. But also, it's very difficult to locate a prime real estate location that has an embedded audience of 16,000 people annually that we can, include in our programming and at least include in our education outreach efforts. So those three things are I think, really critical here to the value added for the Bridgeport Pocket Park. With that, staff does recommend that the Water Resource and Watershed Committee recommend the SCV Water Board of directors to authorize the general manager to execute a construction contract for the Bridgeport Pocket Park. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Matt. We do have one public comment card, Ms. Miltzmeyer. If you want to address the
question. I just have a lot of questions when I saw this, because we just came out of 8 years of drought, and I think that has to be a consideration. Because everything, and I believe this was a park before, wasn't it? Isn't it a park? And it's still a park. Yes, so it has to be constructed with that in consideration. If you think we're not going to have the water for it to be watered and maintained, that's what's happened to a lot of our parks. And I just got concerned about it. Why? Considering it right now and putting that much money into one area. I know you're probably going to look for grants or something, but bear in mind that we may not have any more rain as we're having now. For how many years did we go without? 8 years. We've had a drought. We did not have any water. kids grew up not knowing what a brain was. So I just wondered why it's coming up now and thinking about putting that kind of money into it, only maybe to have it be destroyed in the next couple of years, because are you going to use a lot of water to maintain this? It was just when I saw it, I thought, why now? Why is this being considered when we just came out of 8 years of drought? And for some of us who are saying we can't basically even water your lawns, it's so many days a week and that sort of thing. Now, think about what you're doing for the general population right now. How much you have limited us. And then you're going to put it in a great big park. Somehow it doesn't make sense to me at all. And particularly at this time, that wait and see if you are going to have some more rain. But to commit this kind of money into a park at this time just appears to me to be foolish. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Niltemeyer. Any online comments?
There's none.
Okay. Thank you. Matt, I don't know if you want to address any of those questions such as they are. You're welcome to.
Chair Ford, members of the committee, it is important to note that the landscape that is incorporated in the garden is drought tolerant, natives, and water efficient. So it will use about 40 to 60% less water per square foot than turf grass would. It will be saving water relative to what turf requires. But I think the other thing is that part of our long-term strategy as we move forward with the conservation long-term framework, which becomes effective in 2024, we're going to have the need for landscape transformation on a greater scale because of the amount of turf that was used in typical landscaping historically. And so, that now is with a few years until that legislation and that mandate takes off, what our strategy is to provide landscape transformation, education, support, and technical support to our customers who want to engage in landscape transformation. Again, it's a critical piece of our long-term strategy. We have a lot of conservation opportunity with that, and we also have opportunities to increase the sustainability of our landscapes here in the Valley. But customers need to be able to interact with those, because not having that interaction capability leaves folks to think about landscapes in, those typical kind of terms that are defined by others, such as Phoenix landscape or Arizona landscape, which, by the way, can be very beautiful when you're in Phoenix and Arizona. But I don't think those are the types of landscapes, at least from what we've heard from our customers, that are appropriate here. So we're trying to develop design palettes and design standards and design practices that customers can really grab onto to have beautiful, sustainable landscapes.
Okay. Thank you, Matt. Questions from members of the committee? Director Kutze?
Yeah, I want to mention that Matt and I spoke probably for close to an hour about what was going on with this project and what were the intentions and how it was going to be presented to the public. And I do think that this was a much better presentation than what we had before, because and some of the things that we talked about as well, for instance, as a director, it's difficult for me to see large changes from the budget without a good reason. And it came out that the original budget was not including prevailing wage, right? And hopefully that that's going to be corrected long term, that our budgeting is done better, that it accounts for prevailing wage. Also, the city upsized the irrigation, which we were not expecting. So some things legitimate things caused it to go over the original estimate, which made me feel better about that. And I expect in the future, you know, we'll do better calling out the budget at the beginning so we don't have the large, essentially, change order. I also appreciated this presentation where you line items out the specific contributing factors to the cost, because yes, if a homeowner did this, they're not going to have a pad of permeable pavement. They're not going to have handicap access. Again, they won't have the upsized irrigation that the city mandated. They won't have tens of thousands of dollars worth of signage. So to have this feel accessible to a homeowner, I was having trouble making the leap from how is this something a homeowner would do, but it has to be that way because it's a public park. But a homeowner would not. So I feel better that we're not telling a homeowner, hey, you need to spend $373,000 on your front yard, because they won't have to. And that was a good discussion. And lastly, accessibility. Do I understand that we may be deferring some of the work at the main conservation garden? I think I heard that from Matt, maybe. Is that still going, the conservation garden fixes? Does anybody know? Matt,
yeah.
Or
do you want to take it, Matt, or
do you want me to? Oh, sure, Steve. I go for it.
Yeah. So we are that project. So the last direction was to get shovel ready. And So we are continuing to do that. We're probably a month and a half away from getting final plans. Mm-hmm. And then I think you're going to see us. I think we want to walk through this pocket park. This, you know, as the pilot idea, and make sure that the board is still supportive of doing these types of projects. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, based on that, we'll have a shovel ready other project that we, I think, will check in with the board before we go to bid.
Bigger.
Yeah, it's much bigger.
Yeah.
The scale would be one that I would want to make sure that we have full buy-in before we go through the process to bid it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of my understanding. And I think I got that timing from Matt and our director one-on-ones. But I feel that this is very accessible compared to the conservation garden. I actually go by there a couple of times a week on my bike because it also has the bike trail. So I don't know if your count included just, I mean, the line of parents dropping kids off right there, the people walking their kids by it, all the cyclists, and random people coming by that bathroom, which is right there, which you're right, we don't need a bottle filling station because you walk around that little building and there's a water fountain right there. So I think, you know, if we're going to do something, anything, this would be preferable or, you know, timely. And I feel much better about explaining the cost because it doesn't mean homeowners can't achieve it. They will just be doing it a different way than we have to. So thank you for spending your time with me, Matt, and explaining that all to me.
Thank you, Director Gesine.
Director Cooper.
Thank you, Chairman Ford. Matt, you know, I think the last time we talked about this, the big item was the issue of cost and kind of what's in those costs. And I think the report at that time really didn't show us why the costs were that high. When I went over and took a look at the park, it's a little greater than a third of an acre, which is a good size. There's a lot of work that has to be done there, grading, removing trees, putting in water lines, putting in backflow devices, all of that kind of stuff. And the big item is paying prevailing wage. When a homeowner is putting in a project at home, it's pretty cheap when you look at their time. But when you're paying prevailing wage at $63 an hour for a laborer, not counting the equipment operators that have to be there, the plumbers that have to do it, and prevailing wage for all those folks, it becomes quite expensive. So I think in the future, if we could get, and I understand the cost in this one. And when we budgeted this, we were budgeting for a pocket park, kind of in general. And this one, came in higher than what the amount was. But it's a commercial operation with a great deal of hardscape that's going into it. There's a lot of walkways. There's the permeable pavement for the vehicle to come in on, kind of the center thing of the octopus that's out there. So there's a lot of hardscape that's going into this, which is quite expensive. So I understand your cost. I think just in the future, give us a little better breakdown so that we get a better understanding and we don't have to send it back to you again. And with that, I think this is a great location. It'll get a lot of play there. And I think it's going to be one that we can send people to when they have questions and say, here's the kinds of things you can do. And the way you've broken down each one of the little areas in the octopus that's there with different types of plantings, I think is going to be very good. I'm looking forward to that. I think it can really help people get an idea of what they can do at home as well. So I appreciate you bringing this back to us.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Cooper.
Director Armitage.
Thank you. So a couple questions. One is, somehow I missed the purpose of the tiny home and the electric vehicle. Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, so thank you, Director Armitage. The permeable concrete pad not only will provide a display surface for or a place for the operators and the contractors to park their vehicles when they're doing the landscape work, but we can also use it to demonstrate the permeable pad itself, permeable concrete, but then we could also incorporate programming such as electric vehicles, tiny homes, and other types of sustainable programming that we might want to incorporate with the education effort. So it creates a space that we could put something that requires a pad on if we want to expand and enhance that programming to incorporate those types of components.
Okay. I mean, I'm all on board with tiny homes and electric vehicles, but I just didn't understand that connection. And I'm wondering if that's an opportunity to help maybe pay or offset some of these costs in the future. If we're going to feature an electric vehicle, can we get a sponsorship maybe from whoever makes the vehicle, or, you know, or if we're doing a tiny home with solar panel, we get a sponsorship from a solar panel company or something to help offset some of the costs of maybe not necessarily this project, because it'll probably be paid for, but maybe a future project, you know, include that in the budget. So just a thought about that. And then I'm wondering what the challenges were for the bottle refill station, because I will always advocate for bottle refill stations anywhere we can put them. I mean, I know you had mentioned we're next to a park with a fountain.
It's so close. Like this building, if you walk around the other side of it, which it's a small building, I know I have a different definition of small, but I mean, it's like one of the city typical bathroom buildings. There's a water fountain right there.
But can you fill a bottle with it? Because I know sometimes it's the angling doesn't really allow you to really fill your bottle.
It might be cheaper to upgrade the existing fixture if needed. I mean, I fill my bike bottles. I fill this using the water fountain, but I, you know.
I mean, if you can fill your bottle at that water fountain, then that's great. Then yeah. I don't think there's a need to, but I would like to have that maybe just checked, because if it's not possible, then whatever changes to make so that I just always want to promote people bringing their own water bottles and ditching the plastic as much as possible. Yeah. So, and then just lastly, I mean, I'm supportive of this. I think it's a really important and key piece to the lawn replacement program. You've heard me talk about native plants a bazillion times. I am a native plant enthusiast, and I've been, you know, spending a lot of time over the last couple of years trying to figure out how to incorporate them in my own yard. And I still struggle. I'm still looking for places to go and find examples of plants, you know, what groupings look, you know, nice together and what works well in the shade versus full sun. And so I would go there to look for examples that I can incorporate into my yard. And I think it's a really good opportunity for other people in the community at, you know, whatever level they are in preparing to do that in their own yard. So, you know, I think being a leader in the community and in a place where people can find examples for that is really great. And I think, as you mentioned, if the city staff are learning from us how to do that and can incorporate that throughout the entire city as they work on their landscaping issues. I mean, I can only imagine how much water savings we're going to get just through that. So I'm extremely supportive of this, and thank you.
Thank you, Director Armitage.
Director Colley. So this is just over a third of an acre. And the cost on a per acre is just over $1 million an acre.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand that the point that a homeowner would be able to shave some costs off someplace, but oh my God, $1 million an acre. That's insane. I can't see it. I thought it interesting that less than 10%, significantly less than 10% of the cost is the actual plants. I guess I don't see that. I see a value in this, but I don't see $1 million an acre in value in this. I look at this, we're told in the not too distant future to take out another huge loan, a third of $1 million shaved off here and there would help us not borrow as much, or potentially be able to not borrow at all if we could figure out how to conserve enough money. But I just can't see that this is worth $1 million an acre, even when you take into account the prevailing wage. The fact that we have to pay prevailing wage, I don't think the residents of this valley want to pay somebody to do landscape work over $60 an hour. The entire project just too expensive. I was hopeful that when we sent this back that we could find some ways to economize. That didn't happen. So I'm not in favor of moving forward to this.
Can we go back to your slide with the cost breakouts, and when or if this moves forward, can you highlight which ones are non-standard for homeowner install? I think that would help everyone. Right. So like the engagement signage, they wouldn't pay for that. I mean, is it possible to put a separate column at, without prevailing wage, without the concrete pad, without the, upsized irrigation, just for a comparison, just so we see, what a homeowner would feel for the, and I know, some of the, we're getting a little bit larger plants and stuff, but it is interesting that the plants, honestly, the plants are probably quite close to what a homeowner would pay, having done my front yard. But yeah, the labor is significant. The labor would be included in the construction or in the services, Matt?
It's included in the construction. The services includes the benches.
Right. So a homeowner wouldn't have that either.
A homeowner would not. I think a typical homeowner would probably have the non-plant landscape pathways and pads and plants. And the pads, maybe not, but the pathways, certainly. We see a lot of projects with decomposed granite.
Oh, you did the CG. Okay.
Yeah. And then irrigation. Typically, you can modify the existing irrigation without having to install a whole new irrigation system. So those costs would be greatly reduced because you can convert traditional sprinklers to drip, or purchase high efficiency nozzles and convert them and then utilize those. But in this case, because of the existing irrigation at the park, those are fairly sizable rotors that covered a huge area. And so what we had to do is kind of make it a smaller, more uniform sprinkler system so that it had head coverage.
And you see, I remember the drawing too. You seemed like you had a lot denser irrigation than a homeowner would. Yeah. So if you could talk to that when other people see this, I think that that just makes it a lot more palatable to me to know that, you know,
okay,
suggesting people are going to pay $373,000 for their yard conversion. It's just because we're a government agency and this is a city park, it's going to be that much. And I have some, my political comment of the day. I mean, look at the homeless issue in Los Angeles, right? How they have, they can build a tiny home for what, $500,000 or something ridiculous. You look at all because of like public works projects, like you said, and it is what it is, but a homeowner would not pay this. So I think that that would be something to focus on.
George Cooper.
Yeah, I don't believe we're trying to show the homeowners, here's what it costs you to build a third of an acre or a little over. I think we're trying to show them what you can do with plants instead of turf, and what you can do with hardscape, and what you can do with plantings. And we're building a commercial product. We're not building a home product. And there are a lot of different requirements on us than there are at homes. And so they don't see the price. What they're going to see is the end result and how nice it can look, and hopefully want to go down and change their house. If we don't want to do pocket parks, that's fine. But if we're going to do them, let's do them right and make it so that it's an advertisement of what you can get if you want to conserve and get rid of turf, and here's what you can put in. And to do that, it's not cheap. And I understand Director Colley's concern in this thing. It sounds like a huge amount of money. Well, wait till you find out what it costs to do what we're going to build at the treatment plant in our park up there, which is an exhibition park. We spent several million dollars on it originally, and it served its purpose, and now it's kind of falling apart and we get to redo it. But it's expensive to be able to show people what it is they can do. We're not going to show them costs. We're not going to, you know, all of those things. But I don't like the idea of the cost, but if we want something that's going to provide to the public a idea of what they can accomplish, I think this does it. It does it in different quadrants around this octopus. And I think it's going to be very good. This is our first pocket park. We build it, we see how it goes, and whether we want to move on farther with any other pocket parks. I think that this one will tell us that.
Bill, can you tell me, when was the treatment plant built? When was that garden put in? About 30 years ago?
Oh, not that long. No. If we were there, I'd walk outside and look at the stone out front and tell you how here it is. Probably the late 90s was when it went in. So, yeah, it's probably 24 years ago, somewhere right in there.
And it has...
It's a lot of money in 24 years ago.
Yeah, I guess, you know, my thinking is that, you know, we spent millions of dollars on that thing. It hasn't been used for over 5 years, probably 10 was where it kind of really began to degrade. And so let's be generous and say we got 20 years worth of use out of that park. Okay.
We had thousands of kids that came through. We had lots of parents the weekends that come through. The globe that's out there that explains water in the world. And it did serve its purpose. Was it hard to maintain? It was too large. We went too big with it in the first. So, yeah, it did a lot of good. But then when terrorism hit the world, we had to lock down the treatment plants. And so the park was off limits. And then the last couple of years with the pandemic. But there's a point where it comes back. And maybe it's one thing that we talk about down the road is, do we want to put our efforts into pocket parks and forget the one up at the treatment plant? and make it very small, or maybe not even have one because you have the pocket parks, and not encourage people coming up to the top of the hill. I don't know. I think we should talk about that. But if we're going to do the pocket park thing, you know, it's not cheap. This is going to show us what we can get for this amount of money out of it. Mm-hmm.
Anything else from committee members? One question I had, Matt, the second most expensive line item is signage. And I know some of it's sort of a general engagement sign. Does the signage budget include like labeling of all the plants as well too, like we have at up at the conservation garden and down at the HQ building itself?
Director Ford, Chair Ford, yes, it does incorporate plant signage and provides us with a spare so that we can replace those that might get damaged or whatever. So it incorporates two signs per plant, not per plant, but per type of plant. I should make that clear. But then it also has a monument sign, a kiosk, and then entrance signs throughout the park so that people can identify it from a distance. And then also get information specific to each garden when they're inside the facility.
Okay. And does the maintenance responsibilities falls to agency staff, city park staff?
So in the MOU, Chair Ford, it falls to both. As maintenance was divided into two basic camps. One was maintenance of the land, such as making sure there's no trash or weeds and that it's, you know, well maintained like the rest of the park, and the city would pick up that general maintenance. We would have maintenance that would be looking at specifically those drought tolerant aspects of the plants, which the city currently doesn't have that kind of specialty. So what we would do is we would basically be providing the marginal maintenance on top of what the general maintenance is so that the park can and the plants grow and are pruned in the right manner until it's established.
Okay, thank you. And last thing, I think it was a good idea that the committee has mentioned that with the establishment of a pocket park like this and a garden of appropriate landscaping for the valley, maybe the nature of the conservation garden up at the treatment plant changes a little. And I know that, you know, plans are being developed, but they may need to be a little more complementary. You know, the access to the conservation garden up at the top of the hill is harder for the public. And that's the location where we do our education programs with kids and high schoolers and so on. Maybe the roles should be well-defined between the two and complementary rather than an overlap. We see potential for an overlap there that we may want to avoid, but I'll let staff contemplate that also. So with that, I am supportive of the project, and I hear that, unfortunately, it's already on the agenda for the next board meeting, so we get to make it all again. And
it was a placeholder.
Was there a staff report? I saw the packet
come there out. Was a staff report submitted, yes, Chair Ford.
Okay. So we can't place it on consent. And yeah. That's academic okay. Now. And we'll do it all over again then. But thanks, Matt, for going back and doing all the extra work to help us out tonight. We appreciate it.
And Matt, will the presentation include the things from tonight?
Would that be the wish of the committee? I can use this presentation as opposed to the first presentation, if that's a pleasure of the committee.
Well, I liked this presentation. You may need to remind everybody why we're doing this and, you know, what originated it. But okay. The elements, in particular, you know, why it's over the budget, because the board is going to have to authorize some expense or transfer. You know, that explanation element, I think, will be helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, Director Goodsight.
Matt, one more question. Have we looked at potentially building a pocket park down in Central Park on our property to where our landscape education can be in Central Park rather than up on top of the hill?
We did consider that as one of the options, Director Cooper. But the city's building now that park site down. There was a large area to the west of the park that the city's expanding its facilities. So there wasn't room for what we were looking for in terms of the initial evaluation. For a park at park, that's something we could look at. It just wasn't incorporated in the analysis because the city didn't make that case during our criterion analysis assessment.
We can look at that. Yeah, it might be a good location down there somewhere. It doesn't take a whole lot of land.
Right, a pocket park specifically.
Yeah, that kind of.
Yeah.
I just want to jump in case anybody doesn't remember. The kids were doing tours within a year or two of COVID starting. Yeah. My daughter did it. Yeah. And they do hear a lot of other stuff. Like, I think they go in the lab or something.
Yeah.
So there's a benefit to bringing them there, but maybe they don't need the full-on. It doesn't have to be conservation focused. It can be more water management and complementary, like we said, to planting. So they do a lot of stuff there.
Well, one of the coolest exercises here is build a treatment plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
really neat. Right. You can't do that in a pocket park. Okay.
Thank you.
Last week, I gave a talk to a group of scouts. One of the most fun things that I've done in a long time. Their questions were great. It was fun. And they wanted to know where water came from, what it did, where you got it. And then it got all the way to, well, then how do astronauts get water? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how do you think? and then they all kind of, ooh, wow.
We shouldn't ask that question.
But one of the parents there, I said, because these were fifth graders, I said, well, have they been up to the water treatment plant and done the school thing up there? Because I think we started about fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And none of these kids have been there. Mm-hmm. And they're from Golden Valley Community School. And they said, well, the program was canceled because they didn't have bus accommodations to go to the school. We used to pay for all of the bus accommodations for all of the kids that came up because schools couldn't afford those.
Yeah.
So have we stopped that program?
I'll check on that. I think part of it is overlap with COVID. You know, we stopped all stuff up there. I'll check into that. I thought we were still providing transportation, but I'll check on that.
Good. Yeah, I hope we are. That was how we got the kids up, was to provide that.
Hey, thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee.
Item number five, presented by Rickford Hoots, recommend adoption of a resolution authorizing Texas Clean Water to apply for and execute a grant agreement on behalf of the SCV GSA for the California Department of Water Resources for Sustainable Groundwater Management Grant. So, Rick, if you are ready.
Thank you, Chair Ford. Yes, I'm ready to proceed. And it's nice to see you all virtually tonight.
Rick,
we don't see you.
Can you turn your camera on, please?
Uni, I show my camera is on. Hang on here.
You can turn the room light on then.
Maybe the camera flap. Please open that.
Say it again, Uni.
The camera flap, there's a little flap. Maybe you need to open that.
It's open.
Okay.
I can, well, I'm sorry. I'm not sure what's going on here. Let's see. Are the cords all plugged in? It's plugged in. Well, I think I may need to proceed without video unless you want me to walk over and where you are.
How are we going to see his presentation?
He's going to do a verbal. Yeah. I think you're good, Rick. We can hear you loud and clear.
All right. I apologize for that. Okay. Well, let me get cracking here.
he in the next building? Rick, are you just in the next building?
Yep.
Yeah, they do that.
I am next door. Okay, so as you said, Director Ford, this is an item regarding a grant application. The board report seeks to inform your committee and stakeholders about this next grant opportunity. It would provide an opportunity for SCB Water on behalf of the Groundwater Sustainability Agency to seek grant funding to fill data gaps in the basin related to domestic wells and monitoring wells. As you're aware, the Groundwater Sustainability Agency completed its groundwater sustainability plan. It's in the implementation phase at this stage. That includes filling data gaps. If SCB Water moves forward with this grant application, it would be the third application that it has submitted on behalf of the GSA. We were successful in the first two grant applications. This grant application is different from the previous ones, including that it has a minimum grant request of $1 million. In order to hone what we want to move forward with, our recommendation for projects, we worked with SCB GSA member agencies and the GSA board. We considered a whole bunch of different ideas, ultimately recommending three project ideas to move forward. The first project is for existing budgeted work under the GSP, roughly $200,000 worth of work. The second and third projects aren't specifically called out in the GSP, but we feel beneficial for GSP implementation. So the first project is existing implementation work under existing contracts. The second project is additional work to fill data gaps with private wells. Right now, under the GSP, we're looking mainly at private wells in the canyon areas. This second, more involved step of work would look at wells, private wells, in the entire basin. It would look at well completion reports to improve our understanding about well locations and extractions. Information could be learned or would be learned to update our water budget if needed and our groundwater flow model. The third component is by far the most expensive component. It includes a well siting study for installation of wells in the Saugus Aquifer. Following that well siting study, sites would be selected and monitoring wells would be installed. The data from these monitoring wells would help fill data gaps. We don't have, the basin doesn't have a large number of wells in the Saugus Aquifer looking at water levels in the different zones. This work would help us improve our understanding by installing more wells in the Saugus Aquifer. Now, we've had a consultant develop a scope, schedule, and budget for monitoring wells. We're still reviewing it. The current approach that we're looking at would be to install up to 17 monitoring wells at different depths, roughly installed in 6 or 7 different areas of the basin. Now, these wells would be installed in their own borehole as opposed to drilling a much larger borehole and installing multiple wells in a single borehole. The approach here is a little bit more affordable and a little bit more nimble. Wells would vary in depth. This proposal includes monitoring wells in the alluvium as well. And it includes up to 14 wells in the Saugus Formation, ranging from depths of 600 feet to 900 feet, and a couple wells at 1,200 feet deep. In terms of financial considerations, our estimated project cost is $5.3 million. It may be a little bit more or less following final review of the work plan and the finer details. We're recommending that SCB Water provide a 5% match for this work. The earlier rule book from DWR identified a 5% match would yield additional points in application scoring. Since then, the Department of Water Resources backed off from that, but we still recommend a 5% match be included. It shows the commitment from SCB Water, and in the past, it's typically been a good strategy to provide matches. New costs would be incurred. I mentioned some of the work is already programmed and in the budget, but most of this work, $5 million, $5.1 million, is not currently in our budget. So new costs would be incurred. If awarded, we would include those costs in future fiscal year budgets from 23-24 all the way out to 25-26. And these costs, other than the 5% match, would be subject to reimbursement from the grant. In terms of timing, the Department of Water Resources has provided a couple more weeks to get this grant application in, so we're now targeting mid-December. We would need to provide a resolution adopted by SCB Water's board. A draft is attached to your committee report. We would fill in the final dollars ahead of the December 6th SCB Water board meeting so the full board could see the final costs. And staff's recommendation is that your committee recommend the board adopt the resolution authorizing SCB Water's general manager to apply for this sustainable groundwater management grant on behalf of the GSA, identifying SCB Water as the agency responsible for the local cost share, and to execute the agreement with the Department of Water Resources for the grant. And this concludes my verbal presentation. Happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. With that, we'll go open the item for public comments. Ms. Noltemeyer, you wish to speak on item number 5?
Don't think you should do it.
Okay. Thank you for the comment. Any other members of the public? No, anybody online?
There is none.
With that, we'll open it to the committee members for comments.
Director Cooper. Clarification question.
Okay.
Do those first. So Rick, I'm looking at the bottom of the chart that's on the packet, page number 21. It looks to be 3 or 4 wells for $5 million, and you were talking about substantially more than that, which you help me understand. Your verbal presentation, does it not sync up with a board packet?
Yes, I can answer that for you. And that's a great question. At that time, we were thinking these would be 3 or 4 well sites with multiple casings in the same borehole. And now we're looking at multiple casings in separate boreholes. So you're right, though, that should have been made more clear.
Okay. All right, so just a refinement of the proposal since this got written up, which is fine. I don't object to that. I just wanted to get clarification so I understood the difference.
Yeah, appreciate that.
Director Cooper.
Rick, is there any downside to applying for this?
Not that I'm aware of, other than the the costs to apply for it, but of course the potential reward is large.
Very good. Yes. Yeah. $20,000 to apply for $5.3 million. I'm good.
Other comments from the committee? Director Armitage.
Well, so that was one of my questions. That it says that we budgeted $20,000, but that we don't actually know the actual cost of the application. So that's one of my questions. Do you want to answer that first before I go on?
Sure. The actual cost of the application is probably going to be more on the range of 40,000, maybe 45, between the consultant that will prepare the application and the consultant that is preparing the full scope, schedule, and budget. The GSA budget included 20,000 for the application. Our application cost is around $16,000, so we're a little bit under budget on that. But we didn't include budget for a consultant to develop the scope, schedule, and budget. And so we're a little over the 20, but not a lot.
So my other questions are, could you expand a little bit more on the need for the monitoring wells to help fill the data gaps, to help me understand that a little bit more? And then another question is, what happens if we don't get the grant funding? So you're saying the cost to do this work, which sounds very important, is about $5.3 million. So if we don't get the grant funding, what happens then? And then lastly, I guess I'm still kind of big picture question is, so it seems like the GSA is made up of multiple entities, including representatives from SCD Water, the city, LA County Water Works Division. What am I missing?
Regional planning.
Regional planning, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the decision-making body, but it seems that the costs for the projects related to that fall into the agency, which in a sense makes sense because it's related to water, which we then benefit from because we can sell the water to our customers. But I'm wondering if maybe you can help me walk through that a little bit more in my brain to make sure, or I guess reassure me that we should be taking on all of those costs and not asking the other agencies to contribute as well. And then lastly, so it seems to me that we're paying more and larger amounts of money. Is that a sneeze? Bless you. Maybe. It seems to me we're paying more and more rather significant amounts of money for grant applications. And I'm wondering if at some point we want to have a discussion about maybe hiring on a full-time. I know Cheryl is our wonderful grant writer, but I know that's just part of her duties, or that's my understanding. So I'm wondering if it would be more economically beneficial for us to have maybe a full-time grant writer on staff. I don't know. I'm just throwing those ideas out. That's it.
Okay. So, Director Armitage, I may have conflated your first two questions. I think your first one had to do with what are they and why are they needed? Is that right?
Well, I guess, yeah. So how is what we're currently using not sufficient to meet, I guess, our data needs?
Okay.
Just remind me of that, because I know there's been discussion about that, but remind me of that, because I feel like that's a key point into why we want to spend so much money on filling those gaps.
Well, yeah, I thank you for clarifying that. So the Saugus Aquifer is a very large aquifer, both in terms of aerial extent and thickness. It's thousands of feet thick, at least in the freshwater zones. We don't have a lot of wells in it that help us monitor the groundwater conditions. The reason is that those wells are very expensive, and it's a large area. So from a big picture perspective, it's a very large aquifer. It has a number of wells in it that we monitor. A handful of those wells are the existing Saugus Formation groundwater production wells. There are some other specialized monitoring wells in the Saugus Aquifer that were put in place many years ago to help us understand perchlorate movement from the Whitaker Burmite site. But again, being such a large area, additional monitoring would be needed to help us understand more about the geology. So with the drilling of monitoring wells, we collect geologic information, electric log information. That kind of information helps us refine our groundwater flow model and understanding of the basin geology. Installing the wells helps us understand better the direction and rate of groundwater movement in the basin as a whole. And it also helps us understand more about water quality. For example, what is the water quality in a given area? What are the total dissolved solids? Is there any pollutants? Is there PFAS? Is there perchlorate? So it would help us better wrap our arms around this large aquifer system. And so that's what they would do. And they are expensive because they're deep and it takes time to drill them. So does that answer your first question, Director Armitage?
Yes, thank you for that. I guess one follow-up to that. So the monitoring wells, they're purely for monitoring. They're not for pumping water for extraction and use. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. In terms of the, and if I miss something, just let me know, but in terms of the grant application and the costs, that's our traditional process we've used has been, Cheryl's role has been key, helping us make sure that we're seeing these grant applications. But we do have a big net here at SCB Water when we look at grants. We look at them through the Water Resources Department, through engineering. And if we see one that we want to pursue, we'll typically hire a consultant to help get all the fine details together because they have other resources and experience that we need. Whether or not we need more of a full-time person here is probably more of a Steve or Ali question, but I've just generally described how it works in practice here.
Yeah. You did a great job explaining that, Rick. I think the expertise is part of it. These grants are somewhat niche. The more of them you do, the better, more experience you get at them. And this is not just you give it to a grant writer and they go and, write. You have to have an interaction with them because they don't know the project. They don't understand the project. So there is a lot of back and forth that happens and staff kind of resources that go into that. I do think it's a good suggestion to look at how much we've spent recently. We are applying for a lot more grants and we're receiving a lot more grants. And so as that momentum, continues, and I think part of it is you got to look at state and federal, status right now of what money is available. So the chances of writing those grants are really good right now. There is a lot of money that you can potentially access. So I think it's a great question. I think we can look at those expenses, get a little bit more understanding of that. We do think we're being pretty efficient with the way we're doing it, but it doesn't hurt to take a look at it. We'll do that. I'll take a stab. I think there was one on the parties and the cost share.
Great.
When we put the Groundwater Sustainability Agency together, it is a collaboration of the different entities that we thought would be important to have at the table. Two of those being land use planning agencies. So I think you hit on the point. It really does revolve around the water, and I think specifically pumping water. And now that we have an integrated agency. Our lever of that pumping, our share of that pumping is 85%. moving, shifting to higher than that as the Nehal land supplies transfer over to us. So I still think it's a reasonable approach for the water agency, who is the substantial pumper in the basin that they contribute to most of those costs. So that's how I get my mind around it. But I do think it's important to have those other entities still engaged and in the room, representing kind of those other aspects of land use planning and things in the valley.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then what happens if we don't get the grant funding? Are we, does it come out of our budget then?
We'll be looking at other ways. We think drilling or monitoring wells in the Saugus Formation, I think, is really important. To understand, as Rick put it, the extent of the operation of the groundwater basin. One thing I'll just add on to Rick's explanation is the Saugus is not only deep and wide, it's layered. And that makes it extremely complicated to understand. So there's multiple layers that you go down through between water-bearing zone, non-water-bearing zone, water-bearing zone. Certain zones have contamination in it, certain zones don't. Certain zones have better water quality or worse water quality. And the Saugus Formation is a huge part of our future supply for this community. So I think you're really seeing us step up the effort to better understand that formation and to ensure that it's available for the community for the future. Mm-hmm.
Okay. There was a study done actually a number of years ago, by Richard Slade, who's kind of the hydrogeologist that has overseen our basin and really has an understanding of it, that the estimate was that the Saugus aquifer could be as large as 3.5 million acre feet, which is 10 times the size of Cascade Lake. But nobody knows, and nobody knows how good the water is down there as you go deeper and deeper. So all of these studies, this isn't going to tell us all of that, but these studies that do this are really important for the future, I think.
No, I mean, I agree. But I also think it'll be important to also help sustainability, because then we can tell if we are getting into concerning areas also. So
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Pretty calling.
So a real quick question, if anybody knows, before I get on to their comments. The city, last I recall a few years ago, was looking at some kind of a recharge project underneath the power lines in Newhall. Does that fall apart? Is it?
It never got wings. I haven't heard recently if there's any additional interest in doing that. We are investigating. We've investigated the Castaic area now for recharge capability, and we're doing it out on the east end, but we can look at that again. I know that was being considered at a point in time there.
So that's sort of what I'm wondering is that the pilot projects we've got for groundwater recharge, you know, there's a little learned two sentences here that tells me that, we're too early to identify anything to do. We've been working on those things. I mean, they go back to the reconnaissance study that's at least, I don't know, 10, 15 years old, more? So it's kind of, I just kind of wonder why we don't have something that would be fundable with this to start marching those ideas forward. It seems to me that those ought to be further along even than these, we don't have any sites, we don't have anything for these wells, these monitoring wells. We don't have, we just have an idea that we'd like to have them. Okay. Well, we have an idea. We want to have some groundwater recharge. And to me, groundwater recharge is something that we ought to be. That's important. That ought to be way up on our priority list. I'm not saying that these monitoring wells are not worthwhile, but you have to prioritize everything we do. And I'm not sure how we got to, you know, we think that asking for $5 million to do something that we didn't even have any plans to do at all, was just until somebody came up with the idea that, oh, there's $5 million available, we should do this, as opposed to groundwater recharge, which we have invested a lot of money in thinking about and studying and starting pilot projects and all of that. I would really prefer that if we're going to chase this, that we put, you know, we, you know, unless there's a reason why we think that the groundwater recharge just wouldn't work, it doesn't meet the criteria or something. Everything else being equal, I'd a lot rather see us apply for funding for that than applying for the monitoring wells, which could be put off without any real damage. We haven't had them for 100 years. So that's my two cents. I just would like to see if there's a way that we can put that idea in. Maybe put them both in. Ask for $10 million. Hope you get one of them.
Is Rick going to answer that? Because that was presented at the GSA as rejected option. So can you?
Yeah, it's on here as a rejected option.
Right. That came from the GSA.
Two sentences.
Can you explain it more?
Yeah, excuse me, Director Goodson. Yes, I think I can. It has to do with timing. You know, as you said, Director Cawley, these pilot projects have been underway for a period of time. And we're still not sure that these are going to be good candidate sites. The east end of the basin and the one just downstream from Castaic Lagoon. The one downstream from the lagoon has some promise to it. But we feel more work is needed. And frankly, we weren't sure we had time to really do that and get a proposal together and folding it into a grant application. Steve, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
No, I think that's right, Rick. I mean, the explanation's good. I don't think these things are mutually exclusive, so I think we need to do both, honestly. One is a little bit easier to manage these monitoring locations. You can, because they're just monitoring locations, they're not like a well site. So
don't make noise. You don't have
finding a place to put them. It's still challenging, I will say that, but it's not as challenging to try to locate an actual facility, for instance. So I do think, you know, we're learning on the recharge sites right now. We're collecting information. I think it is important for us as an agency to determine if those are what we want to invest in. And so I just don't think we have enough information to make that determination right now. Mm-hmm. I do think there will be other rounds of grant funding that we will, if that turns out to be a valuable investment for the agency, that we would apply for those types of projects as well. So I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I hear you on priority. It is tough. Everything's a priority. But those ones have languished a little bit. We had some difficulties getting permits to do some of the activities in the river that we need to do to prove out the ability of those areas to be able to accommodate the recharge that we wanted to do.
This Castaic school site, mm-hmm. I understand that we've done the permeability. We have sufficient, we own the land. So site access is not an issue. What would prevent us from having that as a spreading basin within the year? Why if I said, you know, money's no object, go do it. Why couldn't the agency do it?
Yeah, part of the challenge is we have existing wells on that site that are producing, and they don't have PFAS contamination. So locating active recharge facilities becomes a permitting challenge next to producing groundwater wells. And so there's the potential, if we wanted a recharge there, that we have to move those wells outside an area of influence of that direct recharge. So when you purposefully recharge, it's different than just the creek recharging a well. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but that's the way the regulations lay out.
I get it, yeah.
So those are the kind of hurdles. What we're still evaluating now is the value of trying to capture that water to our agency. Do we get value out of it? Are we able to pump it? For example, if we get it into the ground, it's moving. And it's moving down and it's moving out of the basin eventually. So there's a lot of thought that needs to go into understanding the value of that exercise. We currently pump the wells. You're not going to pump them probably more. So is there a large value? You have to start looking at the further down well field and the one after that, and then it gets into the cycles of, you know, the hydrology itself, the weather, the years you recharge. So there's a lot of analysis that goes into understanding whether the value of actually putting the recharge facility in is there.
So my thinking would be that why for the funding to do the study, call up Mauricio and say, hey, we'd like to have you on board as a co-applicant on this. And, you know, because this water, if we put it in here, it's going to eventually run up down there. The more we put in or fail to pump in our basin, the better off you guys are down there. I seems to me that add another couple million dollars and ask for, you know, the money to study those issues that are languishing, that aren't being done in a manner that is as timely as I would like. How's that?
Yes.
Is that, and it seems to me that the whole groundwater basin legislative field encourages the hell out of us talking with others that are within really the same basin. The upper and lower basin are the same basin, obviously. Blue Cut is not a Chinese wall. No. So I wish that we
are doing those things. We are meeting regularly with United. You know, the challenge is you go over that line. It's not just United.
I understand. Although
it's a pretty wide open field
down
once you get over the next line.
No, but I also think that United has got a good relationship with other players down there. The more we can play with them. So that's my thinking. I'd like to see this. I'm not against, obviously, you know, applying for $5 million. I will tell you, as a much larger picture, I think that the way we govern ourselves as a state is flat out stupid. This whole idea that, you know, the state takes on this big debt and then pieces out the money to whoever they feel like it. And it's not really free money. The taxpayers are still paying it, but to us, we're putting the burden on the taxpayers for the entire state. Why not? Even if we do it inefficiently. And this is, grants are inefficient as hell. But I'm not against, you know, I'm not at the state level. I'm not able to be, you know, I don't even vote to be governor. So, I have to, you know, this low level, deal with the reality of what I have. So yeah, I'm certainly in favor of applying for the 5 million. I guess I'm suggesting that some of these things that didn't make the cut, let's think hard about making the cut.
I think Steve was saying that we're not ready to make that kind of an application yet. And there are more opportunities for grant. Grants have been coming around now very frequently. And maybe that's the next big grant that we apply for. But this one, I mean, makes sense. It's one that we need to do. And do we need to do some studies on groundwater recharge? You bet. But we're not ready for it yet.
No, I'm suggesting that if we need the money to do the studies, that this might be an opportunity. That's what I'm asking, I guess.
I think that the study, we are conducting studies. So those are underway. So I think maybe what would be helpful if the committee would like, we can come back, give a presentation on where those stand and kind of some of the stumbling blocks and challenges of that we're experiencing.
But this one only had like 2 weeks to get in.
Right.
Yeah. And
so we've got to get in. And I would say, let's move this on to the board.
Yeah, maybe the studies that we talk about for the groundwater recharge would be better for the next IRWM round of funding.
Yeah.
And then pulling in United as well, too, will strengthen our application particular process. Director Kutzer.
Yeah, it sounds like we're leaning towards moving this to the whole board, and I'll see if it can go on consent ask if it go on consent, because yes, you know, it's significant amount of money for projects that we want to do. And the way I look at it, first of all, before I forget, we should correct when this does go to the full board, the installation of 3 to 4 wells. If you would make that consistent, Rick, with what your verbal was on 17. And I also heard you say 14 Saugus. And I'm assuming the 3 remaining would be alluvial to look at the alluvial Saugus interaction. Is that what the other 3 are?
The numbers are right, 14 and 3. And okay. These other alluvial ones are looking more at groundwater quality.
Okay, so that's not tied to the Saugus assessment. You need them for alluvial water quality assessment.
Right.
And okay.
Director Gutzeit, yes, I heard you about making this table more clear, you know, that Director Cawley flagged. So yes, we'll do that.
Yeah, but the, you know, in the end, the way I look at it is, like you said repeatedly, the Saugus is this theoretically massive amount of water that we need to understand how to use and how much is usable. And recharge has a lot of layers of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
The Saugus sounds like a lot less. I mean, yeah, there might be water, you know, treatment issues or something, but more within our control. It seems like what bogs a lot of these things down is interagency contracts, you know, well influences, et cetera. It's always so much harder than you would think it could be. But the Saugus, for its depth and size, you know, probably is more controllable, in my opinion, anyways. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's why I support more knowledge on the Saugus, because I think we're going to have to rely on that more in the future. And the GSA did approve this, as you noted in your report.
Unanimously, I'm assuming.
I have one other piece of information, a little angel on my shoulder, Cheryl Fowler, the beauty of having technology. She was peeing up for me that this is also only an implementation grant, so it is not eligible for studies. But
there you go.
So there will be other opportunities that we can look at, but it doesn't sound like this is a great fit for that.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Other questions? Director Armitage.
I was just going to mention that I remember a few meetings ago that we had Mr. Velasquez did a presentation on the groundwater recharge pilot project. So that maybe go back and look at the slides from that to spark your memory a little bit. I'll go back to you and look. No. That's helpful. Yeah.
So this could go on consent. I mean, we've done a number of grants. Everybody ought to be used to just doing them.
Why would we say no? Yeah. Other than that.
Application
cost.
Yep, that sounds good. If the committee's all right with that, that's
what we need. I think so. I'm going to church and send it is on December's first meeting.
Terrific.
Mm-hmm. On to item 6.1, which is staff activities.
Yeah, and I'm going to be brief tonight. Main activity is to not try and make Ali be exposed to the fire hose. He already has been. But, you know, anytime you onboard a new staff member, especially one at a level of Ali's importance, there's a lot that goes on internally to get people up to speed. You got to build relationships. You know, it's all those things that you do in an organization. So there's a lot of that going on right now. So I just wanted to share that with the committee. And Ali, I think, has some really great ideas how to spur that engagement and teamwork. So I'm excited about that as we move forward here. And that's all I have for tonight.
No comments online?
There's none.
Any comments from committee? Seeing none. Move on to item 7.1. Matt Dickens would present the status of the drought response and performance.
Thank you, Chair Ford. Let me share my screen, get it set up. I don't know which one I'm sharing. Hang on a second. Let me try this again. Okay. Thank you, Chair Ford, members of the committee. Can you see my screen okay? I believe so. All right. So tonight I'll be providing another presentation on the status of drought response and performance. This presentation has been abridged compared to previous presentations to only include updated information, which means essentially that there are no regulatory updates at this point in time or changes in the water shortage contingency plan status or strategies to implement the plan. So what we're going to focus on here first and foremost is just getting updates on the local weather statistics. So for October, evapotranspiration was down 6.3% locally compared to 2020. And then year to date is only up 7.3%. That's pretty significant. As we look at the first half of the year, we were up almost 18% compared to the first half of the year of 2020. And since then, we're seeing some cooler temperatures setting in, which, of course, helps us in achieving conservation, specifically with the amount of irrigation demand that we currently see here in the valley. Precipitation, this is again for October. We didn't record any precipitation in October, and calendar year to date was down 71%. This does not include the most recent rains that we saw, the few inches that we saw come over the weekend with Ali's arrival. But we can see the temperatures. Again, average max air temp was down to 83.8 degrees from 87.6 in 2020. So again, that matches the cooler temperatures. However, when we look at the drought map, we can see that the Santa Cruz Valley is still kind of straddled by two different levels of drought, categories 2 and 3. So drought conditions do persist in the big picture. So I get this change. Okay, so now turning to our conservation performance. This chart shows us 2020's production in the blue bar, The brown bar is 2022's production by month. And then the dash black dash line is essentially a 15% reduction compared to 2020, which is the blue bar. And as we've seen through the year, we started off kind of with a big blip due to the absence of rain and the second La Nina year effect early in the spring. We saw significant irrigation demands that increased our demand during those months. But then since May, when the agency launched the stage two of the water shortage contingency plan and our communication engagement efforts ramped up to match those water waste restrictions and irrigation measures, we can see that our demands are starting to drop significantly. And for the second month in a row, we were well below, we continue to be below 2020's level. And in October, we were about 14.1% below. So we're that's pretty good continued conservation on the community. This chart is just another way to look at the same data, but kind of gives us some information in terms of monthly change in production compared to the same month from previous years or compared to 2020. And then the orange bar is the cumulative. Both of those numbers are tracked by the State Water Resources Control Board. So anything above the black dashed line is going to be an increase in production. Anything below that is a decrease in production relative to that month in 2020. And then we can see the shaded area, which is when the 15% voluntary conservation compliance request from the governor was announced. Nonetheless, we can see that our trend continues to go down since May. We went from 4.2% below 2020's levels to 7.9 to 9.7 to 10.1 to 17.2 and down to 14.1%. And what I would note here is kind of looking at the trend, our cumulative conservation is continuing to trend down, and now we're at 1.8% cumulative through July through October. But for the second month in a row, our production and consumption fell within that stage two range of 11 to 20%, even though we did see it kind of crack back a little bit, it's still within the bounds of the stage two demand targets. While I don't really have much to report compared to the state's numbers, there's always a lag. And when the State Water Resources Control Board reports out its monthly and cumulative conservation, they haven't updated it as of yesterday for September's numbers. But again, we can see in August, we were, you know, what I'm showing here is the South Coast region and the statewide conservation performance by month, and then the cumulative. And this, the most recent month that the state has is August. So for August, the state was 10.5% below. We were 10.1% below. The South Coast region, which we are located, was 9.7% below 2020 level, and we were 10.1%. So we outperformed the South Coast region, but underperformed slightly compared to the average performance in the state, or the performance of the state. And then our cumulative was down 0.5% compared to 2% statewide. But we can see that that's starting to trend down. There is a typo. October should be 14.1%, and the cumulative should be negative 1.8%. With that, on our action items in November, we have continuation of our non-functional turf ban outreach. We are preparing an email blast to promote signs that we have received to help customers or help our customers notify the community that they're either not watering their turf as a response to the drought and or converting their landscape as a response to the drought and long-term sustainable activity. And we also have about 1,000 sprinkler caps that customers can request to cap a sprinkler that is irrigating non-functional turf, but maybe has other areas that are irrigating trees, shrubs, or perennials. We have finished up our drought ready videos, and we've also completed some social media spots that are about 15 second long, and those will be released here shortly. Our interim monthly reporting is another idea that came up from our group. Essentially, what this means is that the operations has improved their ability to collect production data through the month, and we're going to be coordinating with them to get periodic updates on the, hopefully on the 10th and the 20th of each month, so that we can kind of respond earlier in the month instead of waiting for the production numbers to come in at the end. So this will give us a little bit of early foresight and some leverage and some inertia to act early in the month. We also have fall and spring lawn replacement program priorities. We are now in a, you know, if you are wanting to convert your landscape, now is a great time to do it all the way through the spring. Take advantage of cool temperatures and the rain that we do get. Hopefully we get more. But this is in our valley, it's a prime optimal time to plant. And then, of course, we have continued performance monitoring and adaptive management. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions from online?
There's none.
Thank you. Any questions from members? Opinions from Matt? Or Jarmitage?
Yeah, just one question. I'm wondering what the response is to the request we're making for action related to non-functional turf.
Your Director Armitage, to clarify, you're asking what the response from customers is to reduce. Well, it's been fairly mixed. We tend to think of response in thirds, with one third of customers typically taking some action, the other third kind of looking for more information, and then the third kind of the higher fruit, if you will say. I've seen a lot of customers, who have turned off irrigation. But we definitely have more opportunity to get the word out. And I think that, at this point in time, our goal was to get the information out and then provide some support materials and then to continue to engage and create those relationships so that we can promote this band to customers.
Thank you.
No other comments? Thank you, Matt. And for your reward, you get to move on to item 7.2, the update on conservation activities and performance.
Thank you, Chair Ford. I really don't have much to report today other than what I've shared in my presentations. Just a couple of things regarding activity. Our conservation team continues to see customers notify us with water waste complaints, although we're starting to see those drop significantly, at least for the month of October, November. But we're also seeing an increase in participation in specific types of programs. So that is keeping our team very busy and engaged with the community. I would just like to take another moment, though, just to inform the committee that at the end of the month, Janet Keith, our large landscape water conservation coordinator, will be retiring. And after, I think, more than 30 years of serving serving at Valencia and with SCV Water. And she's provided, she started with customer service and selling a lot of folks homes and onion fields. I've heard a lot about this. I understand there was a lot of onions here in the past. But she sold a lot of folks their homes and was an integral part of helping this community develop and build. And she's been an integral part of our team. And we do wish her absolutely the best. She's been committed to excellent customer service and solutions to help our customers save water. And with that, I congratulate her on her retirement.
Thank you, Matt. Any comments on Thanks. Comments from members of the committee? Just give our best to Janet. Job well done. Happy trails to her.
Thank you, Chair.
And then with that, we'll go to item 8. Steve, anything over here?
Yeah, the planning calendar is for the committee's pleasure, but we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah. Questions from members of the committee on the planning calendar? The December meeting is pretty full. Could be plenty.
We'll see. A couple of those items may not be there, but keeping them on there optimistically.
Okay, sounds good. And then if there's no questions from the committee on the committee planning calendar, then we will move on to adjournment, item number 9. You're hereby adjourned. Staff, thank you much for everything. Dr. Lozano, welcome aboard.
Yes, thank you all.
Off we go. Bring more rain.